So today we're going to look in Sefer Chinuch at a very morose subject. I'm sorry to do
That's
this
okay, that's
on
okay,
Rosh
that's
Chodesh
okay.
Adar. It really should be Mishenech Nas Adar, Marvin
Yes.
B'Simcha. But so I was trying to think how we can make it Simchatik by the end, so we'll see.
I think
Anyway,
it looks
yeah, it's horrible. We're
yeah.
gonna so we're gonna look at capital punishment, which are the next mitzvahs in our order here.
Page 205.
Yeah, sir. So page 205.
Oh,
So,
the has this book now.
yeah.
Yep.
So,
I'm up to date.
great. So the mitzvah is the court is to execute by strangulation anyone who deserves it. Now, there's a machloket between the Ramban and the Rambam. The Ramban does not count the four types of death that we're going to look at today as four separate mitzvahs, but the Rambam does. So the Ramban says that all four of these deaths are included in the mitzvah to eradicate evil from amongst you. So, and that's really the root of all of these. I mean, I just read in the article, in the paper, there was an article about a graduate level studies course where Muslims and Jews are studying each other's sacred texts.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right, so one of the mitzvahs that it points out that it's confusing to people is the mitzvah of Ben Sorer Moreh. Just close the door here. So that the mitzvah of the rebellious son is to kill a rebellious son. And so that's often a classic example used to vilify Jews. Look at the Torah and how bad the Torah is. It says, you know, a rebellious son, you should kill him. What a harsh...
It was a bloodthirsty God in the
right.
Old Testament.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So that's one of the classic things. And certainly these deaths are... And the reasons that you get some of these deaths. So we're going to look at all four of them. So they're spread throughout the Sefer Chinuch. But I'll read you the other ones. But basically, there's four types of death that can be required by the Beit Din. Strangulation, sword, which is decapitation. Fire, which is pouring molten lead down somebody's throat, right? And stoning. Yes, that's why. That's why I'm so glad your granddaughter went into a different room. It's really awful. All of these are just disgusting. So yeah, so strangulation. Just because we're learning about it, and not because I really want to discuss it. So basically, the way that it's done is somebody's buried up to their waist in dung, and then a rope is tied. Two ropes are tied around their neck. One holds one side, and the other holds another side, and they both pull until the person is strangled. So that's the strangulation one. And it might even be the ones who have to pull the rope are the witnesses to the person's crime.
Like the stoning, the first throwing the stone.
Right, so it's interesting, right. So we'll move on for a second. So sword is decapitation. That's
a lot easier.
That's easier. Although strangulation is considered the easiest, actually. It's considered the least, right, it's for the person dying, no, for the victim. It's considered the easiest of the punishments. Yeah, it's considered faster, yeah. So that is supposed to be the fastest and easiest punishment. Let's see if it says that.
Like the time it takes to bury you in the dung.
Oh, well, that part, so that's not so pleasant. But that's not the actual death part, that's just the scary part, right?
That's when you say Shema.
Yeah. I think you can. You say that before, I think, because you can't, of course, say it if you're in the midst of dung.
Yeah.
Well, you probably could if you're about to die, but I think they give you a chance to daven beforehand. Right, so it's interesting that, well, we'll look at all the four different deaths, I guess, and then we'll... So sword, decapitation is decapitation. Fire, you're also the same thing, buried halfway up in dung. And then two different cords. It's interesting, it says a soft one. Let's see if I can find that in here. It's wrapped around a harsh one. Let's see. Okay. Where does it say how it's done? Okay. So for burning, which is lead. Among the laws of the precept, there's what the sages of blessed memory taught. The precept for any person to be burned to death is that he would be immersed in dung up to his knees. A hard cloth would be wrapped in a soft cloth. It would be wound about his neck, and two witnesses then pulled each one into himself until he opened his mouth. Tin alloy, lead, and so forth would be melted, and hurled into his mouth. It would descend and burn his innards. The rest of its details are in chapter 7 of the Tractate Sanhedrin. Right. These laws, fortunately for us, apply only to men. Not in terms of receiving it, because anybody who transgresses could receive the punishment, but carrying it out is a man's domain to carry out, not a woman's.
To carry out the fire. Or to receive.
Women can receive.
Yeah, women can receive, okay.
But only men
only
can
men
carry
can
out.
Okay.
Right. Because it's for them to, the precept applies to men as judgment is for them. And it applies only in the land of Israel, only when the temple is standing, and only when sacrifices are being offered. Okay. Which means only when everything is functioning the way it's supposed to be functioning does this apply at all. So that's important to understand. That we do have things, there is a setup of when things are functioning correctly, and then this is part of that whole system.
The fire or all four of them? Only?
All of them, all of them.
Okay, only
all capital punishment only applies when everything is functioning the way it's supposed to be functioning. So, right, and we'll see. When everything's functioning the way it should be functioning,
that must relate to Adar somehow.
There'll be very little chance of anybody doing anything that needs capital punishment. So really, the capital punishment that we're learning about, although we are learning about it, is mostly for deterrence and for lessons. So, but before we go to that, let's look at the next one. Where is that one? 555. Stoning to death. Stoning is more severe than burning, so this is considered the harshest one. burning more so than decapitation, decapitation more so than strangulation. Whoever was given two death sentences by a Beit Din, whether on account of two transgressions or on account of one, he's executed by the more severe one. If any people condemned to death become mixed up with one another and they are not recognizable, they are all to be executed by the lightest death sentence among them. Among them. So let's say, I don't know, pirates were caught, right? And they're charged with multiple crimes. Each one had their own separate trial, and a few of them are charged with two things, and a few are charged with one thing, and then they all get put into a prison cell together awaiting their execution, and now you can't tell who's who. They're identical quadruplets, whatever. And so all of them will get executed by the lightest sentence that all four of them needed to be executed by. So how is stoning? How does that work? This is interesting.
Good morning.
Hello, welcome. Here you go. So we're discussing capital punishment today.
That's pertinent. Did you get that email from going around?
Yeah. What's going on? There was a Tehillim thing last night.
It was last night. Didn't have a date on it. I couldn't find a date.
I'm pretty sure that was last night, yeah. I davened for him at the chuppah here last night. Apparently there's a Jewish Baal Tshuva.
Yeah.
In Florida,
right. Who's...
What did he do?
He murdered.
He did murder.
At 19, when he was drunk and high. So I don't know, was it a police, whatever it was.
Drunk?
He definitely did it.
No.
He was 19 and drunk and high. He was a stupid 19-year-old.
He put a gun to the back of somebody's head and pulled the trigger.
And he killed somebody at 19. He's now been in prison for 25 years.
Wow.
He was sentenced to death. But he's been in prison for 25 years.
Yeah, the appeal process is absurd.
He's been a model prisoner the whole time. It was an aberration in who he is. He did do the crime, right. No question about it, and he admits that. But he's not, it's not who he is. He's not a danger to society. So they're just asking for his sentence to be commuted to life. It shouldn't be death, it should just be life. They're not even saying, please let him out, which I think might even be legitimate at this point. He's not a danger to society.
Is he mentally impaired?
But he did a wrong thing.
In some way?
I don't know.
Because that's unclear.
I don't know if he is or not.
I've heard that too, but I couldn't find it anywhere.
It can't be mentally impaired enough that he couldn't get death.
Oh.
Right?
But one of the people here, wrote that he should have been evaluated and that that's a reason to not execute him. So I don't know.
Anyway, he certainly was impaired when he did the crime. But by choice. So we have to decide, as a society, how we deal with that kind of choice for impairment.
And the law of the land is Florida, death or life imprisonment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the law of the land.
Right. So.
That you're ethically living in. Yeah.
So, right. So.
Is it?
May his sentence be commuted.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that is the right thing. So were you going to ask, is it okay if we wish for that, try for that?
Do we?
Absolutely. We are absolutely entitled, especially in a country like this, to work with the legal process of the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and to daven for, write letters for, mm-hmm. attempt to change in all those legal ways. We're absolutely entitled to do that. And we have to keep the laws.
And should do that.
And should do that
even
on behalf.
If he killed somebody.
Absolutely, on behalf of a fellow Jew. Mm-hmm. Does he need to die for that? So capital punishment, according to the Torah, is only when the temple is standing and everything's running the way it's supposed to be running, which is not today,
mm-hmm.
and only in the land of Israel. That doesn't mean there's not capital punishment.
And only with two witnesses, right?
So yeah, we're going to talk about that. But there is capital punishment for non-Jews too, and I don't know enough about that, so I can't comment on that. Certainly not today, but. There is such a thing as capital punishment. We do believe in it as a concept. Was it meted out often? Not. It was not, and it's not, and it's considered a bad thing to need to mete it out. Part of that is because it's a commentary on our society. How bad is our society if we are... that we are a society that allows people to develop in such a way that they will require capital punishment. That's really the commentary. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of a society are we if we don't provide support and education and drug counseling? And, I mean, even why drug counseling? Why not enough help that you don't even have to get into drugs? Yeah, like there should be, there should be stable youth. And we should be a society that has that. And so that's why it's saying only in temple times, only when things are running correctly, only when all the sacrifices are being brought and the whole society is running. That's the only time this kicks in, because that's the only time that you can really say something clearly went so wrong that that person needs to die. Mm-hmm. Today, there's so much that goes wrong. How can you say that?
But it doesn't
We're a
excuse
mess.
It.
Oh, no, it doesn't excuse it. We Jews won't impose it. We Jews in the land of Israel don't impose it today. And we today, I mean, if a Jew is a judge and that's the law of the land, then he has to...
He has to meet it out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No question about that. And he has to go by the halacha of the law of the land. But our part of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, there's six don'ts and one do. The one do is to establish courts of justice. So a society does, every society has to have courts of justice that impose the law of the land and a just law. So as long as the law is just, and in this country it's relatively just. I mean, we have due process, we have... Basically, I mean, yes, there's corruption for sure, but basically our system is just, our law is just, and our people are basically functioning correctly, basically. So within all of that, then the law of the land stands. So a judge or a lawyer would have to, I mean, they could probably ask a shiloh or possibly recuse themselves from a case in which they felt, let's say there was capital punishment for trafficking heroin. So that's not a capital punishment in the Torah. So it's possible that a judge or a lawyer who was observant might ask a shiloh and ask to recuse themselves from such a trial because they would feel uncomfortable imposing capital punishment on somebody where the Torah doesn't prescribe that kind of a punishment for that type of a crime. However, it's possible that they're not permitted to, because trafficking heroin does mean causing murders. Mm-hmm. So maybe trafficking heroin means you're a murderer. You're just
Somebody's
one step
to
some. A lot of Somebody, people are going to die because of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's okay. I don't know. So those would be shilohs to ask, you know, if somebody was in that position. Anyway, so this is how stoning works. Here's the procedure for stoning. At a distance of 4 cubits from the place of stoning, the man sentenced to stoning had his clothes removed until he remained naked, whereupon his private parts were covered in front. A woman, though, would not be stoned to death naked, but in one tunic. The place of stoning was at the height of 2 men. He would go up there with his witnesses, with his hands bound. One of the witnesses would give him a thrust on his loins so that he fell on his heart to the ground. If he did not die by the thrust, so you imagine, so it's 2 people high, so it's 2 stories, basically, a little bit less, a story and a half. If you go to a platform that's that high, with the two witnesses that witnessed the crime that you did, they push you off the platform so that you'll fall onto your heart, right? A person falls onto their heart. If they die from that, great, that's considered death by stoning. Easiest way to go of this death. Let's say that doesn't cause the death. Then they would pick up a stone that was placed there, so they have the stone ready, of a weight for two persons, meaning it's a heavy stone, a boulder, a big one, right, the two people can pick up. They would relax their hands and drop the stone on his heart.
From the platform also.
Oh, I don't know, maybe. Sounds maybe like it is from the platform. Uh-huh, yeah. That could be. Right.
Helps.
Oh, so that would, yeah. Uh-huh, so that should help. If he doesn't die from that, his stoning would be by all Israelites. For it is stated, the hand of the witnesses shall be the first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people. Right.
That's the worst one.
This
right?
is considered the worst of the four deaths.
Yeah, because you have two chances not to die.
Right, right. So it could be.
You go,
it's
sword,
it's
you
kind
go.
Of a long procedure here. Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting to think about these four deaths and why and when each one. So for that, we'll look in Abraham Chill's book, The Mitzvot, which is a great reference and resource book. It has all 613 mitzvahs listed, but the nice thing about it is that it groups them. But the thing that I really like about it is that at the end of each mitzvah or small group of mitzvahs, it has references. So the references tell you where to look stuff up in other books. So, and it always references the Sefer HaChinuch. So if you want to look up something, let's see. So I was looking up capital punishment. And so the references are in Sefer HaChinuch these four mitzvahs. Right? So if you want to know where they are, you can look them up. In Sefer HaMitzvot HaGadol, it says where they are. It talks about the dispute between Maimonides and Nachmanides and where you can find that dispute, where in the Talmud it is. So it just tells you all the places to find these things. So here are the lists. Okay, so for we... Unfortunately, I didn't get to finish typing it out, so I'm going to make you write it yourselves. Strangulation, sexual relations with the wife of another man. Kidnapping another Jew. Inflicting an injury on one's parents. Defection by an elder of the people of Israel from God and the Torah. So this is not by any person. A regular person is allowed to defect without this type of punishment. But a rabbi of a shul, a Talmud Chacham, a sage, somebody who's in a clear position of public authority or knowledge of their role. People know that is an elder. That is a somebody to look at. If they defect, death by strangulation. False prophecy, and then also prophecy in the name of false gods. So those all require death by strangulation. It's interesting, inflicting an injury on one's parents here is not death, right.
That's the worst.
Right, so death, for sure death, but even an injury, so it talks about even drawing blood. So a child is permitted to heal a parent in a way that might draw blood, but they shouldn't. So they, like, let's say a parent has a splinter. If there's nobody else around, and taking out the splinter removes a drop of blood often, right? If there's nobody else around and they can't do it alone, then the child can help. But they really should look for somebody else to do it. And certainly a surgeon should not operate on a parent unless they're the very best surgeon for that procedure. But then they need to ask a shaila. You're not supposed to draw blood from your parents. So not, for sure not by hitting. But not even by healing, you shouldn't. Hmm. So we are supposed to be very careful about even drawing any blood for any reason from our parents, so any type of injury at all. Right, so those all require the lightest death sentence, strangulation. Sword, which is decapitation, is for murderers. And, interestingly, the people of a city who permitted themselves to be misled, so they became idol worshippers. Meaning, you have a whole city here of people. This is not the... There's two different criminals here, in a way. There's the one who led them astray, hamachti et harabim, the one who causes to sin, causes the many to sin. Early Reform rabbis had that din, or earlier in history also, like a Karaite priest or people like that, people who are leaders, orators, charismatic people who are able to take groups away from Torah observance. So that's called hamachti et harabim. It's a It's leading the many astray. It's a sin from which you cannot do tshuva. Because you can't fix it. It's not that you may not do tshuva. You cannot. It's not possible.
Unless you can bring them all back?
Right.
Is there any violation of a Torah principle?
Yeah. I mean, so is it a violation of one of the 613 specifically? I'm not sure. But it's absolutely, I mean, to lead somebody astray purposefully, even if you believe in it, right? But you're leading people astray. So, right, so unless you can fix it. So let's say...
But even if you brought everybody back, you couldn't...
How difficult. So let's just say a leader of a congregation, let's say like Aish, right? Just imagine why you can't do tshuva, okay? So the leader says...
Everybody next door.
Right, so the leader says we're all going next door, or we're all eating treif, or we're all having a banquet of whatever, or we're all having an orgy, whatever it is, right? Okay, so now he's led everybody astray. Now all those people who believe the leader, right? It wasn't just they're leading, he's leading. They have conversations with their friends. How do you find every ripple effect and fix it? You can't. You can't. You know, I mean, you have to wonder, like, unfortunately, and Hashem should help him do tshuva, a guy like Madoff, mm-hmm. can he do tshuva? How many people are going to die because of what he did?
Or him committed suicide.
For sure the suicide, but I'm talking about the senior citizens in Russia who are not getting food packages from the Joint Distribution Agency because they're out of money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Or the doctor's training that won't happen because Hadassah lost money. Mm-hmm. Or, like, really? Yeah. So what things weren't invented or will be invented later, you know, or people's lives ended earlier, cures that aren't, like, all that stuff. People suffering in colder homes or whatever it is, less clothes, less education, all that stuff, you know, because of...
More than a ripple, it's a wave.
How can you do tshuva for that?
Right. But he doesn't get death penalty for anything like that.
No. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, no. Hashem will take care of it. Hashem's in charge of that stuff. So it's interesting because some...
Yeah, but he can only go to Gehenna for 11 months.
The regular people.
Ah, a special place.
For yeah. Regular people only get the maximum of 11 months. Rashaim get 12, but super Rashaim have their souls destroyed. So, and the soul destruction process is very long and painful. So there is justice. In the end, there is justice, for sure. So the question is, where is the justice? So somebody like him, who can't do tshuva in this world, it's not possible for him to pay. Even if you would torture, even if human beings would torture him in this world, it's not possible to exact from him the amount of suffering that he caused for others. So it's not possible for justice to happen in this world, so it has to happen in the next world. Hashem has to be the one to mete out that justice. So, that being said, however, one reason why there's different levels of capital punishment is to try to help get some of the punishment in this world and less in the next. So that's why some of the deaths are particularly uncomfortable, because it does make a difference, and it makes a difference in terms of the level of the crime that the person committed. That's why there's differences in the death sentence.
Deterrence.
Right, so it is deterrence, right? So the one who leads people astray, I'm not sure that's you know what his death penalty is. Maybe we'll see that. But the ones who are led astray, they are held culpable for being led astray. They had no business allowing themselves to be led astray. You know, people are not sheep. We're human beings, and our brains are all intact, basically, and we are required to use them. And there's no saying, "Well, I was taught this, and so I didn't consider it." Sorry, that doesn't wash. So we're not allowed to be that way. Now we're allowed to be that way in small ways, but not in big ways. So if Rabbi Meyer says, the law is the way you check your vegetables for bugs is X, Y, and Z, then we're all allowed to believe that. We don't have to go and say, did he research it? Does he really know? Is it, you know, we just do it, right? But if he says something that, and because that flows with our general knowledge that kashrus is a mitzvah, and we have to do it, and bugs are part of kashrus, and now he's telling us how to keep the laws of the Torah. But if he would say, You know, bugs are absolutely mutter. In fact, covered in chocolate, they're even better. And so, you know, seek out as many as you can. Then we would all have to say, this does not go. It doesn't matter if it's Rabbi Meir, and we have 20 years of history with him. You know, this does not work with what I have learned in general, and I need to check further. You can't just go by the fact that he's a great man.
Or what if he says the opposite? What if he says, because of bugs, you can't eat grapes and broccoli?
Then you would probably trust him for that.
Really?
Yeah, because of your history with him. I mean, if you have a hard time with the broccoli thing, so you could look elsewhere for other halachic opinions. But that's not contrary to the Torah. That's incongruence with the Torah in general. But if you would say something contrary, as far as you know. Right. Apparently, blanching it for a minute turns the bugs black and easy to see.
Just put it in the freezer.
Or that, I guess. Yeah, I haven't tried that way, but I've heard the blanching.
To rinse them off.
Yeah, before.
Right, and then you just check it.
But I don't know how you rinse them off. They get caught in the broccoli, I would think.
You just check it. You look at it. If it's covered in bugs, after you do that, after you change the color of the bugs, then it's done. You can't eat it. It's too many bugs. But sometimes broccoli is pretty clean, just like baby spinach can be. Yeah, can be very clean. Mm-hmm. So if you check, you know, three in a box, and the box is clean, and you can eat that box.
A box by frozen.
The baby spinach.
The baby spinach.
Okay. Baby spinach, right? You know, I've checked whole boxes of baby
spinach. Broccoli thing.
Right. I've checked whole boxes of baby spinach because the leaves are so
frozen.
No, fresh baby spinach from Costco or something.
The plastic.
The box.
Okay. Right.
Right. You could. I've checked whole boxes, and it's. Oh, clean.
Right.
So when a product is generally so clean, you're permitted to check three leaves as a sample from each box. When those three leaves are clean, the box has the law of clean.
Can be assumed to be clean.
Right.
But broccoli.
Broccoli is not that way because it does not have a din of being clean. So you check.
Right.
But if you, from your bag of broccoli that you buy from Costco, you blanch it and then you check three. If you find three, so some people can check the whole thing, but if you find three to be sterile clean, you can assume that the batch is clean. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you go by your rabbi. Everybody has their own methods. Everybody has their own methods, right? Okay, so.
So it's interesting.
I just wanted to ask, are both of these number four and number two, or neither one would be called an apikoresim?
I would say probably number four is an apikores and number two is not.
Oh, okay.
Im is plural, so apikores one.
Apikores.
Right, so would they be called an apikores? So, yeah, I think four would be a public apikores. So an apikores is a person who knows enough about Torah,
right.
A very wise and learned person who rejects it after on the basis of their wisdom and knowledge. Right, so you can only be an apikoros if you're learned. Pretty much nobody that we know today could be an apikoros. Rabbi Kagan could be an apikoros if he wanted to be, chas v'shalom. But basically, you don't have too many Jews in Denver who could, on the planet, who could qualify for that today. You have to be very knowledgeable to be an apikoros. Yeah. You got to really be, yeah. So, and that's what it's talking about, is somebody like that. So defection of an elder of the people, I would say that would apply to probably a Yoel Unger, too.
Right.
You know, he could qualify for apikoros, should he so choose, God forbid. But even though he's not in a public role of leadership, he is a leader in the community. He is an elder. And so his defection would be much stronger than yours or mine. Right? It would send a clear message. So it would be usher.
You'd be up there too.
Whatever. So as a teacher, maybe I would be in the harder category. I better be careful. Yeah, probably. Yeah, certainly as an elder.
As a teacher.
Yeah, and as a teacher, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, as a leader for sure. So, right. Absolutely. Right. So it. Extremely, yeah.
Very,
so the public leaders, absolutely.
Yeah.
The public leaders have a harder din on them. No question about it. Because what they do is seen, right? I mean, the Chilul Hashem and the Kiddush Hashem that they do is ever greater.
Actually lead people.
Right.
I mean, they teach them, don't do this.
Right.
Don't worry about that part of the Torah. That's no longer applicable.
Right. So that's
a very dangerous position, I think.
Yeah, it is a very dangerous position, right.
Right.
Okay, so now we have number two, which is your question, under the sword category. People of a city permitted themselves to be misled. No, that's not an apikoros.
Okay. That's the person that's misleading.
The person that's misleading them, yes. It's not necessarily even an apikoros.
Okay, so this is...
You don't have to be an apikoros. You have to be. You could be a charismatic leader. You could be an Obama, who's a good orator, who says, you don't have to do that. The path to redemption is different. Let's go with this path. He's not an apikoros to say that, right? But if he's leading people astray, so he could shift, or somebody could shift the minds of a whole Jewish community.
Mm-hmm. How about a leader of a Noach organization?
Doesn't matter. That's a separate din from the people of the city.
Okay.
So the people of the city who allow themselves to be led astray to the point of idol worship, they incur capital punishment. They are responsible.
That guy's got his own.
Right. He's got his own thing, and the people themselves have their own thing.
Okay.
Permitting yourself to be led astray is not okay.
It says that.
To the point of idol worship, though.
To the point of idol worship. You're held accountable for permitting yourself to be led astray altogether.
Right.
But you don't get capital punishment until it's idol worship or something else that gets capital punishment. But,
and that was prevalent back in...
Well, for whole city. So that's what it's saying.
Times.
You can't say, there is no law, like say I was going the speed of the road. You're speeding. It's your responsibility not to speed. Doesn't matter if everybody's going 75 into 60.
Right.
You can't go 75. So that's what this is saying here. The people of a city who permitted themselves. It's not a person. The whole city went that way. So you could easily say, the whole city, all my neighbors, my friends, you know, the schools, everybody was doing it. And
whole city had to have done it?
No, the whole city, the fact that the whole city is doing it is not a defense.
Right.
You can't say
but
that.
You can't say
the
every
city. Everybody jumps right. off the Empire State Building.
Right.
I understand that, but does the whole city have had to have gone along with this in order to incur this death?
No, I don't think so. I think just each person incurs it. But the whole city is doing it is not a defense.
Okay.
Everybody incurs it. So, until what point and all the laws of how that works, yes, that will be discussed in the Talmud. You know, how many people, what is a city, what does that mean? People in the city, how far do they go? What is idol worship and how do they... All those questions are answered in Gemara discussions. This is just the concept that there is death by sword for such a thing.
In other words, don't let yourself be misled.
Correct. That is correct. Okay, so now.
Fire. Moving on to fire.
Moving on to fire. Right. Right, moving on to fire. Here are the following crimes are punishable by death with fire. Adultery, these are all sex crimes. Adultery by the daughter of a Kohen. This is pretty much, I think there's only two places where the daughter of a Kohen has her own special din. One of them is here, that her adultery is worse than others, because she's the daughter of a Kohen. And the other is for Pidyon HaBen, of course she doesn't need to. And well, for Pidyon HaBen and for, oh, just for Pidyon HaBen, right. For Pidyon HaBen, even if she marries a Yisrael, she does not have to redeem her firstborn son. So the daughter of a Levi and the daughter of a Kohen, let's maybe back up. There is a mitzvah to redeem one's firstborn son. If the first fruit of a woman's womb is a male, then that child belongs to the Kohanim and to temple service. But God doesn't make you give away your kid, so you can redeem it. And then you just buy it back from the Kohen. A daughter of a Levi and a daughter of a Kohen, even if she marries a Yisrael, does not have to redeem her firstborn son because she is of the clergy class. And so her child is not consecrated further to clergy class. But it comes from her. So that's where she retains her status, only in that. It's interesting. Otherwise, she's a Yisrael, except if she goes home, and this only applies to a Bat Kohen, if she goes home and the Kohanic family is eating truma, which only Kohanim can eat. She can eat truma in her parents' home, even after she's married a Yisrael. Her husband can't, but she can.
Mm-hmm. Privileges.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Sephardia. Truma, the separation, the tithing, a particular tithe of produce, which can only be eaten in Kedusha, only by Kohanim. That's why I said it doesn't apply to Levium, because the Levium also get Truma, They also get a tithe, but their tithe can be eaten by anybody. They can serve it at their table, and people, they can share it with their friends. But Kohanim can't share a particular tithe that they have. It's only for Kohanim, only in Kedusha. So they don't get to, they can't share that. But the Kohanic daughter who married out, so to speak, married a Yisrael, can eat that in her parents' house. Just like a Sephardia, who was raised, a female Sephardic Jew, who was raised in a home where they eat rice, right, for or whatever, kitniot on Pesach. When she visits her parents for Pesach, she is permitted to eat their food. He's not. But she is. So even though in her own home she can't prepare that, because her husband's custom doesn't permit that, but in her parents' home she can eat it.
So because her parents can use kidney out in their home,
she can eat it.
But you wouldn't think her husband could go to that home at all.
Oh, for sure. It's not kosher on Pesach. You can eat in a home that eats kidney out on Pesach. You just can't eat kidney out.
Okay.
You can eat from a pot that cooks kidney out on Pesach.
Okay.
Yes. Kidney out is 100% kosher on Pesach. Just we Ashkenazim have a minhag not to eat it.
What about badatz? Can she eat that in a parent's home?
What do you mean?
Badatz
is a hechsher.
Yeah,
gebracht.
Yeah, gebracht.
Okay, good. Because badatz is a hechsher.
Okay.
And a strong one, so like everybody eats badatz. Gebracht, thank you. So gebracht, yes, a person who marries a man, my understanding is if she marries a man who does not eat gebracht, she could eat gebracht in her parents' home if they eat gebracht. Right, because that's also just a minhag.
Right.
It's not kosher. It's just a minhag of stringency. So it's absolutely kosher to eat from, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Back to fire.
But again, ask your own rabbi.
Back to fire.
Okay. Okay, so death by fire, adultery by the daughter of a Kohen, sex relations with one's own daughter, sex relations with one's daughter's daughter, or with one's son's daughter, or with one's stepdaughter, or with the daughter of one's stepson, or with the daughter of one's stepdaughter, or with one's mother-in-law, or the mother of one's mother-in-law, or the mother of one's father-in-law. Those are is that 10? Yeah, those 10.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Daughter's daughter.
Okay. Okay. Adultery by the daughter of a Kohen. 2 is one's own daughter. 3 is daughter's daughter. 4 is son's daughter. 5 is one's stepdaughter. 6 is daughter of a stepson. 7 is, did I just get ahead of myself? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7, no, I just didn't want to keep saying sex relations, just in case, like, your granddaughter can hear everything. With the daughter of one's stepdaughter, one's mother-in-law, mother of mother-in-law, and mother of a father-in-law. Those are all usher.
Okay, daughter, stepdaughter, what? What comes after, what's 8?
Mother-in-law. The problem is mine are listed by letter, and I think it's even 11. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. No, it's 10. So 8 should be 8, 9, 10. Okay, 8 should be mother-in-law. 9 is mother of mother-in-law, and 10 is mother of father-in-law. All those get death by fire. So it's all sex crimes, crimes by sexual relations. Father, mother of father-in-law.
Okay, but it's not all the sex crimes.
No, it's not.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's not. You can use
right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, the first one is.
Except for the first
daughter.
One.
Right. It says sex with one's daughter.
No, she's saying these are all incestuous.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, they
yeah.
are.
They're all of them are incestuous.
Having sex with right. bestiality and all that.
Right, right. There's not part it's of this. Right. That's they are coming up.
Stoning.
Now
right, right. Stoning. Now up to stoning.
Okay. Stoning. How many are there?
Okay. What letter is R?
A lot. Okay.
It's a lot. Okay.
Okay.
Idol worship. Working on the Sabbath. Relations between a man and a virgin betrothed to another. Isn't that interesting? It's a different death if a man has relations with his virgin betrothed, which is also, I believe, death penalty for both.
No, wait, say it again.
If a man, a virgin who is betrothed, and that's a formal betrothal, not engagement like we have today. It's the betrothal that we do right before the wedding. You know, in the chasen's tish,
yeah.
they sign an engagement document. Mm-hmm. And then they bring him in for the bedeck, and then they have the chuppah, and they, right. and they have the wedding document.
They used to do that.
They used to do that a year in advance. So once that document is signed, she's betrothed. She actually needs a formal ceremony to unbetroth her. And she can't have sex with anybody, not even the one that she's betrothed to. It's considered adulterous during that time. It's a level of adultery if she would with any, even the one she's betrothed to. Which is why today we don't do that. We only do that minutes before the chuppah to protect everybody. That there shouldn't be any relations, and there shouldn't, I mean, problems with relations, if there are relations, God forbid, and that there shouldn't be any problems with if they choose not to get married during that time. So you only have a few minutes of betrothal before the wedding. Mm.
So who's liable, the man and the woman?
Both, yeah, both are liable. Four, cursing the name of God with another appellation customarily used to denote him. So cursing the name of God, even if it's not God's name. So it's one thing to say, you know, God's name something bad, but you could say the Abishter something bad. The Abishter is not God's name. We just, it's a Yiddish word used to mean God, right? So even if you would say, even if you would curse God with that, it's still death penalty. Inciting an entire community to worship idols.
Oh, that's the one.
Right. Incest with one's mother is worse than the rest. Or with one's daughter-in-law. Or the sacrifice of children on the altar of Moloch, in particular of Avodah Zarah.
What is that?
Moloch, M-O-L-O-C-H. Moloch. It's a particular, the sacrifice of children. So Moloch was a particular Avodah Zarah that required child sacrifice. Incest with one's stepmother. Close the door. A sodomy with an animal. Sodomy with another male. Relations between a woman and an animal. Conduct described in the biblical characterization of the wayward son who gorges himself with food and drink to the point where he may eventually commit murder. So the wayward son is somebody between the age of bar mitzvah and 3 months afterwards who steals money from his parents and with the money buys excessive meat and wine, gorges himself, gets himself drunk to the point where he's just a wild, hysterical 13-year-old doing what wild, hysterical 13-year-olds might do. If he gets so nuts that he might commit murder, he has to be killed. And not
even
a nice killing.
But if he might commit murder.
Right, if he's that wayward son. Which is a whole big deal.
Lock him up for that 3 months.
Yeah, well, so the thing is, and he, there's all kinds of laws with that, of course, too. He has to be brought by both parents to the Beit Din. And both parents have to be in agreement that he needs to be brought to the Beit Din. Mm-hmm. They're the two witnesses. Mm-hmm. So he's got to be so bad that both parents bring him. But not only do both parents bring him, it's not like today where you just say, I can't take it anymore, I refuse custody of my child, you know, you take him over courts. It's not even that. It's that both parents have to stand and recognize that they failed. You know, that they are bringing their child to this means they messed up their parenting so badly. Because it says no child is born that bad. They all can only become that bad if they didn't get proper guidance. So the parents have to stand and say, we blew it to this point where this human being should no longer be alive. Yeah.
But what if a parent did everything that they thought they should, as we hear today? You know, I did all that I could, and he's gone wayward.
Right, so
then
today,
what would the application be?
It's not. We don't. This, it doesn't apply today, and it only
not
applies
sometimes.
Under certain...
Right.
It basically is only applying... It doesn't even hardly apply, first of all. I mean, the circumstances are so specific that, it, I mean, barely ever. I mean, just so little. The point is education, and hopefully we'll get to that. The point of all this really is to teach us something. Okay. So, yeah, this that's only, yeah. So it's
Manoff's mother, if she was alive, would say, but he's a good boy.
He was always a very good
right,
boy.
Right, right. So, so here's the next one. A spiritualism. And there's three in this category. So spiritualism, witchcraft, and sorcery. So they're all three different things. So spiritualism, I looked up what that avera is, seems to be pertaining to superstition. divining things from bones, tea leaves, those kinds of things, the divination superstitions that are strong superstitions, that not just saying poo-poo, that kind of superstition, but a stronger one that requires an action that you're getting something from, or even if it's fake. It's interesting that here in this book, when he talked about witchcraft, it was different than sorcery. Witchcraft seemed to be, could be communing with dead. Sorcery could be doing things like magic tricks. It's interesting, I went to a mikveh fundraiser in Long Beach, New York, and they had a magician. It was just the entertainment for the evening. And Rabbi Abitan, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the rabbi of the Sephardic Shul, went ballistic. He ran home, he brought his Rambam back, he showed the rabbis who were sitting there, this is usser, doesn't matter if it's illusions, you are not allowed to have illusions and no magic, it's completely usser midaraisa, this is absolutely wrong, you cannot have a fundraiser for a holy institution based on the trefus of even apparent magic. Not okay. He was furious. And it was so just fascinating to see.
You saw that?
Yeah. And his zealousness.
What
his.
Do?
They held differently than he did. And so.
And it was their mikvah.
Right.
And it was their mikvah.
Right. And so it was the, I mean, he was one of the rabbis in the town. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, and I don't know the answer to this really, in general, unfortunately, Sephardic rabbis are held in lower esteem. Even though our bigger Talmidei Chachamim of the Sfarim are Sephardic.
Right.
But the rabbis of today, the big ones are Ashkenazic. And they're the ones that preside.
Now, wait a minute. Who was the one that went home?
The Sephardi one.
The Sephardi one.
Mm-hmm.
That was an Ashkenazi.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Ashkenazi town. Right.
That's argument kind of makes sense.
It does make sense.
Sense.
It does make sense, but Sephardi rabbis have color in their skin, and we Ashkenazim don't appreciate that. We come from societies where white is good, white is right, and that makes a difference. And also, there's the intellectual elitism of we Ashkenazic Jews come from Europe, but not just from Europe. We come from college-educated stock, and we care about it. We come from an intellectual culture, and we care about it. And the Sephardim don't. So the Sephardic rabbis do, but the Sephardic people don't. And so Sephardim are not held in esteem because of the intellectual elitism of the Ashkenazic culture.
Except on Pesach when we're jealous of their food.
Right, except on Pesach when we all wish we could eat rice. And right. Although Rabbi Abitan did not drink coffee, he did not eat kinyot. And he also didn't eat coffee or chocolate on Pesach because they both come from beans. Mm. Which is not actually, I mean, it's not actually, they're not actually beans and it's not even kinyot. And yet he was extra careful in it. No kinyot, I mean, no. So not even coffee and not even chocolate on Pesach. Because they come from beans.
But why did he hold that way?
I don't know. That's a Moroccan minhag.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't just him personally. That's a Moroccan, yeah. So the Moroccan Sephardim don't. I mean, I think there are Moroccans who do, but not the Moroccans from his city.
Okay.
Had their own minhag of no kitniot, and including coffee and chocolate. Yeah.
What a world.
Yep. Okay, so the last two on this list is cursing one's mother or father using the name of God. And inciting an individual to worship idols, which is different than inciting a community. So all of those incur death by stoning.
So if you said...
And what was the last one, inciting?
An individual to worship idols.
Okay, as opposed to the whole city.
Right.
So all these...
Interesting, it's worse. Oh, no, it's the same.
Yeah.
So the common cuss word... combination.
Right.
Gee.
Right.
Stoning?
I don't think so, because that's not actually cursing God. That's asking God to curse the thing.
Okay.
Right? That's invoking God's name for the curse, to curse the thing. It's not cursing God.
Oh. Okay.
Because I don't think it's G. I don't think it's
curse.
G, comma, D.
Or...
It's a directive, right? It's a directive. It's not that you're damning God. It's that you're asking God to damn the thing,
okay.
I think.
Yeah. Like okay.
When we say that.
Your knee on the table.
Yeah.
That's good.
Right.
you're saying, take it out on the table, God.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, you're not trying to take it out on
that's
God.
True.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what that is. So I don't think that.
That's
so that is
thing,
that right? is considered cussing, and certainly in the Christian tradition, that's considered cussing.
Okay.
Right? And is that based on this? I mean... Me being somebody who...
I think it's not taking the Lord's name in vain.
Oh, right, yeah. Right. So why don't... Right. That's taking the Lord's name in vain. Right. That's not from cursing God, right?
You actually have to say, curse you.
Right.
May you.
Right. Something like that, yeah. Cursing God. Which may happen, let's say, in a Holocaust.
Right.
You know, where somebody is that mad. They probably wouldn't be taken to task for it then. But
my father was a frequent God curser.
Right. So that So that could be. I mean, I think that
just to say the worst thing he lost was his God.
Right. So then he didn't lose it.
Yeah.
You know, if he says it that way, he didn't.
Right. Well, yeah, right.
He was
right.
Just really mad.
Yes, he was really mad.
But he didn't actually lose.
He didn't get in my mother's way with us.
Right.
I mean, so.
He lost his relationship with his God, right. But he didn't lose his God because he was still there if he felt the loss.
Yom Kippur was when you put the year's pictures into the picture books, into the albums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't go to work or anything.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so let's look at all this for a minute here. What can we see that is a thread through all of this? I mean, all this capital punishment, which rarely, if ever, happened, very rarely happened. So what do we learn from it all?
What very rarely happened? I'm sorry.
Oh. Capital punishment.
Yeah. Okay.
The crimes happened, likely.
Okay, but they hardly ever followed. Were able to, you have to have witnesses, right?
You have to have witnesses. For all of these. In order for capital punishment to happen, there has to be two witnesses that say, Allison, do you know that if you strike, that today's Shabbos, and if you strike a match on Shabbos, you will be liable for the death penalty of, and you have to say the right one. And then you have to say, you have to look at them and say, yes, I realize it's Shabbos. And I know striking a match is a violation.
And I see I have two witnesses.
And I see, and I could care less. Strike. Wow. Then they're required to go report you.
That's
not an option.
Pretty brazen.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, how often is that going to happen?
And especially if you look at, you know, all of these incestuous women.
Right. When is that going to happen?
Who's going to have a relation with his mother-in-law and then bring two witnesses?
Bring two witnesses.
Two witnesses
have to see him start up with her,
right.
Warn him, and he has to still do it in front of them. So, right. So all of this is to teach us.
Yeah.
It's all to teach us. So it's all to lay down the law, first of all.
To show us how severe these
right.
things
so,
are.
Right. So, A, it's to show us how severe they are. You know, this. They're, what it's saying is, they're, so I think, let me just say this first. I think looking at almost all of these, maybe not false prophecy, but most of them, I think a thread that connects them all is that one has allowed their physical to take over. Right? One is being ruled by their physical, or is allowing their physical to rule them. They are leading with their body and not with their soul. And that is against the purpose of existence. The whole point of our existence is for us to lead with our soul. The whole point of us being here is to create a relationship with God, with our soul, to use our body to facilitate the growth of that relationship, the establishment and the growth of that relationship. So all of these are about using our body to distance ourselves rather than to come closer to that. So if we do that, what it's saying is there's no point in you being alive if you do any of these things. You violated the whole purpose of existence, and so you should be killed for it. That's what it's saying.
So
see you later.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, let me just tell the one joke I have here. So, because it's Adar, right?
Yes. It's
so,
Adar. Be happy. It's
so,
Adar.
It's a gallows joke for Adar. So, if your mother is an Amalekite, your father's an Amalekite, and your mother is Jewish, which makes you Jewish, but an Amalekite, and the Jews are supposed to wipe out the Amalekites, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have a mitzvah to commit suicide? So that's the joke for today, to lighten it up with a capital punishment.
Do
you have a mitzvah, if your mother's Jewish and your father's an Amalekite, do you have a mitzvah to commit suicide?
To sustain my wanting my kids to come for Pesach, for my daughter can eat badatz in my house.
Gebracht.
Okay, what source?
You have to ask a Shiloh, and she'll have to ask a Shiloh. Right. And if she can't eat gebrachta, she can't eat it.
Okay.
But the kids can't. Even if your daughter comes with her family and her children, they can't. Only she could.
Okay. My grandkids can.
Right.
And my son-in-law can.
Okay. Right. So there's no point. It doesn't help you much.
What is gebracht?
Gebracht is broken matzah, wetted.
Only broken matzah?
Yes. So that's matzah meal.
Wetted.
You can't use matzah meal. You can't make.
No matzah meal. Those people who don't eat gebracht, you can't do. There's no right. So there's no matzah balls.
With matzah, period,
no matzah balls.
Yes, you can.
You can.
You can have liquid with matzah. Yeah.
Potatoes.
Right. So those who don't eat gebracht, it's nuts and potatoes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Potatoes.
So all it means is that, like, let's say you have a famous cookie that has gebracht in it. She could sneak that cookie in the back room because she misses her mommy's cookies. But it doesn't mean you can feed it at the meals.
That you can lay it out on the
right.
Table.
Right. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You gave me a recipe once.